This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Mona Lisa, move closer. I'm scared tonight. I watched the news this evening and there's much to fear.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, in beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth. Come record at Trinidad, 817-733-5256. We'll make your record here. Or book Phil Pritchett and the full band. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. All my sympathies, folks. You've been, as we always say on the show, going through iTunes, being spammed by crappy bands from every corner of the world, imploring you to join them in their quest for world domination on Facebook and MySpace or whatever. Do they even have MySpace anymore? I don't know. Maybe a few songs. You might find a few Ghost Pritchett tracks floating around there in cyberspace.
Find Tila Tequila.
Oh, who is that? Hark! Who goes there? Do you realize, folks, that it has been almost 1 year? This is episode 5050. That is 1 year almost to you and me. Right now, an artist looks back. Phil Pritchett is in a retrospective mood. He's sitting here with his feet up on the trunk here at Trinidad. And who else to join us? But who is here at episode one and so many thereafter? The great Kurt South is here. How you been, South?
I've been awesome, P2. How are you? You look like you've been drinking today. You all right?
Drinking? No, I've been drinking a lot of coffee, you know. You know what the problem is? I pride myself on staying up with what's going on. I read a lot of blogs. I follow the news. I write songs. I mix. I record. I do everything. I'm doing anything I can to try and stay up, to try and stay ahead, try to stay right on the edge. Right, and I think occasionally I just get overwhelmed with it. Starts to weigh me down.
Too much information.
Yeah, man. I feel the pressure to just put new songs up and tweeting and coming up with unique, silly things to say on Facebook. Then I just see a Rolling Stone picture of John Mayer with his shirt off and his tattoos, and I just go, what's the point, man? It's a freaking douchebag.
Is that what you say when you see John Mayer shirtless?
Whatever. I'm pushing a grocery cart through the store. I got kids hanging off. It's late. I got to get home and start dinner. I wonder if I have enough money in my account to get through the deal here. I'm doing the deal. And man, it just weighs you down some days, you know. It's when the rain starts falling. Oh man, you know.
Are you kidding me? Money in your account. I wish I had Phil Pritchett money.
Yeah, that's right. Look at you. You threw your wallet out. You got a couple hundred sitting here. What's that from? You're wielding, throwing some big. You gotta be careful carrying cash like that around in a recording studio.
You didn't notice the pistol I laid down next to it either. Come and get it if you want to try.
That's right. Dare you to try.
There's a 38 special attached to the back.
Well, guess what I heard today, folks? And I don't mean to. I'm just going to tease this for a future episode here very short. I've heard the new Kurt South record. And I'm going to tell you it's dynamite. Although, we comparatively listened to Kurt's Watertown track that we did in my place here like a year ago or something like that. It was a little while back.
It's exactly a year ago.
About a year ago. Still sounds pretty damn good. Now the new version sounded great too. It had a lot more instrumentation, a lot more exciting. But we just A-beat it in the back room there, and we were kind of like, I don't know, it's a little more stripped down, you know, it's a little more.
But you know, that's the one track on the new album.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's that, I mean, we're of course happy with the way it came out,
sure,
because it made the album, but it lacked a little bit of the punch that the original did, I think.
Barry said the same thing, because I said, oh, I want to hear Watertown. I love that song. So I hit it, and Barry shook his head and said, I don't know about this one. I'm like, this is a great song. He goes, oh, yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know if we really got it, you know, or something. He said something like that.
We didn't.
And I didn't know. I thought it sounded great. It does.
I mean, it's, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right, if we hadn't just recorded it a year ago in a different context. So, but man, that first one, it was a brand new song. We,
yeah,
all just learned it. We were excited about it.
Yeah, there were some extra parts in the harmonies. I think I went and did. There was just a little more, a little more Dan in Watertown.
But by
it was still a great track, though.
But by the time we, you know, we redid it, you know, Will hated the song and was tired of it.
The drummer
was like, oh God, this one again, and you know,
oh. Well, that made me feel a little proud that
no,
I
was just disinterested in the whole process.
Well, maybe look for the Pritchett-produced, Pritchett-engineered version of Watertown just floating around somewhere on some later Kurt South publication.
It's out there.
I could put together a great Kurt South B-sides in about 1 second in my iTunes.
You could.
You doing Meet Me in Las Vegas for some demo for some guy in Nashville or something.
Yeah.
There's a Cry Love on there somewhere, and Watertown, and All the
Some
Time in the World. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff.
We need to float that Vegas track out there.
We do. So what else been going on? You've been playing a lot, playing with the band, making a record.
Man, we had a huge show at the band a couple weeks ago, man.
Fort Worth Stock Show. Of course, the White Elephants, y'all. Is that where it was, the elephant?
Yeah, just had a great
Just
great
slammed
show.
It out.
Just
so line who's in, who's
around
in the band
the
now?
Corner.
We got the last Will lineup. Hobbs on bass.
Yeah, the most recent lineup was Will Hobbs on bass, Jeff West, the Bishop Jeffrey West on lead guitar.
The Bishop, really? He's got a nickname, the Bishop?
Yeah, wow. we're you know, Reverend Will Hobbs.
Well, Jeff from Zoo Music.
From Zoo Music.
Yeah,
Scotty Jenkins.
Yeah.
Fort Worth's favorite law enforcement officer.
How do you pay all these guys, man? Give him free beer and $20.
See that gangster roll on
God,
right around
know,
with.
Man. Jeez, I can only afford like one or two guys.
Yeah, we also had a fiddle player, Marion Brackney.
Grief.
Marion Brackney, who is, listen, if you haven't seen or heard this girl play, she's
fiddle player?
Yeah, she tours with Susan Gibson.
Okay, right.
And she lives here in Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
Is in freaking credible.
Dude.
And then we had a first time drummer with us, the great Brian Ferguson.
Yes, of 1100 Springs fame.
And
great
player. Man, he's
have you heard their new record that we did in the back room?
I've heard.
Dude, I heard on the ranch that I've only heard it back here in our A room.
It's
and,
awesome.
They got great songs, man, that stuff.
Dude, Matt Hillier. Listen,
you
Matt
gotta
Hillier
show
is,
me the money.
That guy
I'll
is
show you the door.
Hillier's been around forever.
Yeah.
And is just he's just got it, man. Very few cats roll the way he does.
Dude.
And he's impressive always. And that whole band is. But, man, we had
So Ferguson on drums, huh, from 1100 Springs coming out.
Yeah, I just insulated myself with world-class musicians.
Dude.
To cover up my own weaknesses. And, I've been playing a lot and getting ready to go do some shows out of state here next week.
Where are you heading?
We're going to be in Mississippi and Arkansas.
Do
our CD release shows out there.
Outstanding, man. What's the name of the new record? I saw the art.
Fast Train Home.
Fast Train Home. Yeah. Our own John Reynolds here in the building who did the art for all of our Blueprint Garage things, the Bullfighter thing, a whole bunch of Pritchett t-shirts. But he took some great pictures at Fred's, right?
Yeah, it was
with
inside
the neon.
Of Fred's.
He showed me the shots are really cool. Came out good on that.
He still has the ones of me shirtless somewhere.
Stop it.
They didn't make the final cut, but they're out there.
Well, man, I'm going to get into this next segment here. I'm going to come up with an issue that I recently got the privilege of working on young band, came back here, did three songs in the back room. I want to talk more. I'm always just intrigued with the young guys, you know. We do a lot of recording of guys like that, and it's some indication of where things are headed, where people's mind is. And we're going to look at it. They did three songs back there. I want to talk to you a little bit more south about the virtues of the single versus the album. Now, we've talked about the death of the album many times.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
This keeps taking on a more... I kind of didn't believe it when I first started hearing it, although it made perfect sense. You got iTunes, it's all about the single. But the more I look at it, and the more I look at it in the context of like guys coming in here and recording, and are they going to pay for a whole album? I go, well, you know, that's a lot, you know, or is that something you record in one day? Or issues, man, and many other issues to be confronted. In our next segment, we're going to catch up on a little business news, stuff like that, with our good friend Kurt South returning on this, the annual look back. Pritchett & South remembers a year of the P2 podcast. We'll be right back.
I know the traffic headed out is moving slow, but I really got nowhere else to go. I'm content to be right here and stay. Somewhere a poet was writing.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 podcast. Oh, yeah, I know you've got the new album, Mark of the Human Hand. Thank you for all your kind words.
The Beard album, by the way.
The Beard album.
That is a Beard album.
Thank you for your emails, for buying it, for downloading it for $4 on P2Tunes.com. We got a new album out, a bootleg of sorts, a board tape, Alive Alone, 24 songs. Go to P2Tunes.com, a Phil Pritchett P2Tunes exclusive just for you, the fans. $4. You can download the whole damn show. It's a solo acoustic show we did in Cypress Saloon the other night. A lot of the old stuff, some rarities, and some of the new stuff as well. Good times. So check that out. Kurt South is here. Man, what are some thoughts, South, that strike you sitting here? We're talking about the album versus the single. But more, deeper than that, man, of all the issues we've discussed, you sit here on this IKEA sofa, here in the comfort confines of Trinidad World Recording Studios. You've seen so much in a year. The P2 podcast. Mm-hmm. What, anything stand out over the last year of broadcasting here from this perch?
The main thing that stands out is...
Careful. It's a family show. What's that?
It's just the fact that we've done this damn many of them.
That is. That's incredible.
And people... The interest grows.
Man, only recently have I become aware of some of the far-reaching effects of the podcast.
There's been a few back rooms and... Excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. Is that you blowing up? Come on.
I thought I turned it off.
Tell your agent to call you elsewhere. Listen to this.
You know, there's been some back rooms in Nashville where the podcast has come up in some high-level meetings.
You know, it's getting to the point where it's flattering to hear some... musicians, we had Pat Green on here, we had Gary P. Nunn, and some guys like that. Owen Temple was big, man. Owen's got a far-reaching...
Owen's a legend, man. I used to be front row at Owen Temple shows 12 years ago.
He's been around a long time.
Throwing up and...
Our web guy, Kevin Haggard, the patron saint of the full band, said he was looking at some of the numbers. You can tell... It's hard to tell exactly how many people listen to every podcast, but you can definitely monitor some activity on the site. It was downloaded here. It was listened here. And there was a huge spike from our already growing graph of listening. So I guessed. I go, man, I was probably from the Pat Green thing, you know. And Pat's a big guy. There was a spike for Pat. But the biggest of all, man, the Owen Temple podcast.
Hey, Owen's a strong man.
Dude,
he's been
out there a long time. He travels in Europe and the Southeast and East Coast doing all kinds of stuff. Dude, we've been playing that Gary Floater, Dirty South.
Genius, man.
We played that at the Roadhouse. The stock show has been in town here. So we played with Gary P. Nunn the other night. Nunn came on the podcast. And dude, we play that, you know, just, I drank white light and went and stood in the crib. There's an acoustic version of me doing it live on the Alive Alone album. That was like maybe the first time I'd ever played it. And
awesome.
It's just got those funny lyrics. It's easy to play. And, man, people just go, dude, play the one about the NASCAR and the girl taking her top off at the lake, you know. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Gary Floater eating a song, you know. And
that project, that was Owen, Jason Eady, and Adam Carroll, right?
Yes. Rumored, you know, Owen I kind of said, hey, I want to talk about the Gary Floater thing in the vault, you know, and how you guys came up with this funny thing. And he kind of looked at me and went, man, you know, it's all about, we just found the songs, you know, and Gary, let's just talk about Gary and who he is. Like, he kind of wanted to play it kind of straight. And I went, all right, you know. So I just kind of, the whole interview is me kind of saying, hey, man, so how'd you come across the songs of Gary Floater? He's like, well, he's the world's most unsuccessful songwriter. He, you know, rides around on the, what is the little thing, you know, the little handicap deal, the cart, you know, the Walmart deal. I go, now, is he disabled? He's like, he just wants people to think he's disabled.
He's on a hover around. Sounds like, yeah. Kind of like Leon Russell. He's always yeah. one of those.
This is what Floater's on. He just goes around running people over. And you need to go look at the YouTube stuff.
I'm uncomfortable with this.
Yeah,
I
know.
I think you're making fun of
it. But that was a seminal moment that stands out here in recent history. Hey, man, Pat Green coming on. I hadn't seen him in a long time. He played a gig. So that was a good time to see him.
Was Pat a better co-host than me? Shoot me straight.
No, come on, man. The quote of the a couple of great quotes from the whole podcast was, I thought from the year that was Pat just kind of going, yeah, I sold out the Astrodome, but you know what? And he just paused and he just looked skyward for about 10 seconds and goes, nobody cares. And I just thought, well, good. Then I'm going to quit trying right now. I'm going to quit trying to do it.
Man, I got
What are some other? Yeah, good.
Well, I got a lot of emails from people after the Pat Green podcast.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. Oh,
man, been just replaced by Green.
Yeah, well, come on. Yeah. Who can replace Kurt South? Come on.
I'll tell you come some on. Other.
You see any other episodes or topics come to mind?
Well, the main one that comes to mind is so we were discussing the album covers. If it's just some guy standing on a beach with some Bermuda shorts on,
now that's
the album's
going
to suck.
Right.
But if it's a picture of Roger Craiger in a fur coat with a long beard, you know it's just going to be this great treasure trove.
That's right.
And then we started talking about, you know, my next album would have me face down with smeared lipstick and empty
high
bottle
heels.
Of booze. And
yeah.
Just, you know, really dark. But it turned out that wasn't the case because Reynolds held on to those pictures for his own use.
For the artwork on a future Kurt South project.
For the artwork in his...
That was one of those great episodes because it was kind of funny that, that kind of, you know, it all if the artwork's really fun looking, the album's no good. If it's real dirty and kind of distant or disconcerting, it might be a good record. And but I didn't. That wasn't like we didn't start that segment to make that point. It just sort of arose out of the conversation.
It devolved into that.
But days later, I really pondered on it. Like, I mean, we kind of just came up with that all encompassing blanket statement. But ever since then, I've been searching the world to disprove it.
Yeah,
and have not been able to do it.
I'm waiting on the next Phil Pritchett album, just called Live from Siberia or something, where you're standing in the middle of a snowy field with the Russian fur hat on.
Right.
And just a long wool coat.
Flanked by a couple of, like, sort of Inuit-looking women. You know,
yeah, just but y'all are just stared off into space.
Yeah. A bottle of vodka.
But what's funny is that you can see just underneath the coat that you have bare legs. You're not wearing any pants, but you are dressed for winter, except
you don't
have pants on.
That would definitely intrigue people.
See, I think what all this has shown is how quickly, well, you just got a glimpse into at least how my dark, twisted mind will go off in a direction.
Don't, you know, isn't that why we all listen to the podcast, to hear Kurt South just delve into these dark crevices of his imagination. It's so disconcerting and disturbing. Yet I laugh. Here I am laughing the whole while.
I want you and Stu to remake the John Lennon Yoko Ono album cover where they're both nude.
Oh, yeah, the two virgins, famous. See, man, sort of a tribute to one of the most well-known. Another podcast, and I thought that we made great strides here. This was early on, like maybe 8 or 9 or 13 or somewhere in there. I remember being very nervous about doing the Traveling Wilburys bit.
Yeah.
That we were, you know, we talked about topics and gigs and told stories. And I said, man, the Traveling Wilburys, we did that whole bit, you know, about the
being creepy.
They're kind of how they're creepy, you know, Jeff Lynne,
Huckabee,
Roy Orbison. Yeah, Huckabee got mad. Zach Huckabee made a record here. He goes, man, I can't believe you're just crapping all over the Wilburys, man. This is a great record, dude. I'm like, I like the records. I'm just saying. You know, when you see the video and they're all still smoking and, You know, they're all just
wearing tank tops and acid wash jeans.
You see underarm hair and cigarette smoke and yellow teeth, and Petty and Dylan are all hunched over together and over the soundboard, you know, drinking.
Just a rail of blow within reach.
Drinking coffee and breathing on each other. I was like, oh, gosh, you know. Yeah, Harrison comes walking in. What'd you have him wearing? George Harrison. He comes in to do his tracks. He's got like a double neck Ovation guitar. And
yeah.
And a snakes in a zebra print duster, yeah. with some white suede boots,
or white high top Reeboks with Velcro around the ankle. Yeah.
Oh man, the memories. Oh, the memories. It's funny to listen to those early episodes we did. Man,
they were rough, weren't they?
Pretty rough. I mean, when I go back and hear them.
We were trying to be good.
Well, you're a little self-conscious, and I just was always kind of going, fun, really neat and fun things coming up, real fun. So, you know, just kind of like, you know, there'd be just time where I'm just stumbling over things. I was like, man, I need to talk a little more fluidly, not get hung up as much. I don't know if I've gotten a whole lot better, but
I think my darkness helped bring the show together.
Man, it's the yin and the yang. Yeah. The yin and the yang.
You're the straight man, and you can count on me to make some just references.
Make light references.
By the way, the emails. One day, I just need to bring in the emails.
Yeah.
Let's go south. What's wrong with you?
That's right. Yeah. Do people get offended by some of your?
Not offended so much as why would you
shocked?
Say that?
Just, why would you say
where did
something
that come
like
from?
That?
Or, yeah, there's been a few who are offended, and I just give my standard reply and say, I don't do a podcast. I think you have the wrong person.
That's right. You have the wrong Kurt South, I'm afraid. Well, man, what else? Any other seminal episodes?
Man, well, I thought, I don't know
moments,
if it was
guests.
Seminal, but Pete Coatney was outstanding.
Yeah. Oh, that was a really great one. Was that the first time he was on? It was you, me, and him.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think it was. He told the Rolling Stones story.
And the Johnny Cash story. And
that was great stuff.
I think as great as it is having, you know, Pat Green and Gary P. Nunn on, and mm-hmm. Owen Temple, having the legendary sideman who has a different view of everything.
Right.
It offers you a good perspective. You know, a guy like Pete has been watching from the rear for
literally
18 years now.
Yeah.
And it's cool to get his take on it, you know, because he's not the star. He's not the guy necessarily dealing with all the issues and all that. He's just back there playing drums, and he gets to be almost a fly on the wall to someone else's career, and that's
right.
A cool thing to have, I think.
It is. It's a unique perspective, and you're not going to hear a radio interview during time with Roger Ray, the pedal steel player.
Have we had Roger on yet?
Man, we need to. He was another guy. I was trying to think. He was another side guy who had come in. He was always one of the top of my list. But I haven't called him, I don't think.
We need to get Roger Ray. We need to get Will Hobbs in here, because Hobbs will tell you why he'll never make another album with me again.
Is that right? Wow, blasphemy. Well, we're going to have we're looking like we are going to have Michael Terabay, Pat Green's bass player, and my old friend. He's going to come by and do a podcast.
Awesome.
You know, talk about being the sideman. He's married to, of course, Natalie Maines of the Dixie Chicks.
Boy, will he just open up on that?
You know what?
Open up.
That's entirely up to him. If he wants to talk about it, fine. But you know, I'm not gonna.
We know so many great sidemen who play with these great bands. We need to.
Yeah, I think that. I think it's interesting.
Just yeah.
Well, and there's talks of also my old friend Alex Whedon, who plays guitar for Miranda Lambert for several years, and we've had Jordan Powell on a couple times.
Always had a secret man crush on Alex Whedon that I can't quite
you did
put my
really
finger on.
Whedon, do you hear this? Oh my gosh!
And I don't even know the guy. I mean, I've met him several times.
Well, he's very nice guy. Very nice. Has a lot of great guitars.
But I've always, you know, even back when he's in Honey Brown, man, I'd go see Honey Brown just to see Whedon.
There's just 300 17-year-old girls screaming at Honey Brown and Kurt South out there, just with a big old dip of Copenhagen in,
yeah,
and a bottle of whiskey in his boot. Just who is that guy? Because he's a narc.
Narc. Yeah, I don't know. I've always just been just impressed with the Whedon. I don't know.
Yeah.
If this creeps you out, Alex, I'm sorry.
Electric Alex Whedon.
I'll stay away from your house and all that.
Oh,
but
man. Well, in our next segment here, I want to look back at some of the records. It's the vault section. We're not going to do a particular album. We're going to just kind of retrospective the vault. You know, pull out a couple key moments, some ideas. Certainly our Sparring Over the First Doors album got a big response. I got several emails on that.
Yeah, you and me both.
That's right. We're going to look more at the year that was, a year that maybe should never have been, a year of the P2 podcast, the beginning of many more.
A year that has cheapened your lives considerably.
No.
We will be punished eternally.
That's right. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It has enriched the lives, mostly of myself, being able to just sit here and talk about what goes on, especially with you, Sal, and your dark take, your neuroses that just come streaming over the airwaves.
The truth
here
isn't always pretty.
Every time you're on the show, I just leave feeling a little bit better about my life. You know? I like Sal giving the day. He just laid it all out there. Golly. Man, I just go skipping off to play a tip jar gig somewhere, you know. Well, coming up, we're going to look at some of the records. Oh, man, we covered 50 records. Good God. How many more do we have over there? Well, we got a few more.
We haven't even gotten to the Joni Mitchell records yet.
That's right. that might elicit a Doors type of reaction. We're going to look at A Year in the Vault when we come back.
Everybody's trying. I wake up in the middle of the night. I was sleepwalking and dreaming of daylight.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's our 1 year anniversary, ladies and gentlemen. You are to thank, fans. Thank you so much, folks. Every time you send me an email, post a little something on Facebook, a text message, a phone call, or order a t-shirt off the site, just know that it goes right across my desk, me personally, and I'm so appreciative. I always respond to everything, emails, anything like that. I write little personal notes when you order a t-shirt, you know?
Creepy.
CD.
Creepy.
Well, you know, I just I'm sitting here, so I say, hey, thanks for ordering. Know that I see every bit of it.
It goes right across the desk in between the 1986 Ricoh copier.
Yeah, that's right.
The old school dial telephone.
Smith Corona typewriter. They make typewriters? Smith Corona? Yeah. That's what I got.
He recently upgraded to a Brother word processor.
Oh, that, of course, is Kurt South here. We apologize for our... We're just kind of glued together here. We stole an afternoon here. We've been wanting to get together and have a little year retrospective here these next couple of shows.
It's been tough, man. There's a recession going on. You got to work.
Session, work, gigs, families, just business going on.
We've been buried.
I wanted to sit here and just sort of seek in and just try to reflect on 50 years that was. And, we teased a little bit the singles and the album. We didn't hit that in the last segment.
No, we didn't. We need to hit that.
Of the album, man. Well, you know, there's no secret that singles, man, it's kind of back like it was in the 50s and 60s, man, like Elvis. You just go cut a 45, maybe a B-side, you put it out.
I would say that, it probably should have always been that way. A lot of people don't understand the history of the album and how it came to be.
Right.
And it came to be largely as a tool for record labels to make more money off of a single, you know. So I don't know. I think...
Well, you know, it really didn't come to light until, Rubber Soul, Revolver, mid-60s Beatles, singleless albums. Certainly by Sgt. Pepper, the album was a statement. That was 1967. We've all been making albums ever since, but back then, music was scarce. You only got one Elton John album a year or something, or Beatles, or whatever, what have you. You saved up money, you bought that record, you listened to it till you knew every little note. And it was like that for a long time. But in this day of just music everywhere... and our friend Bob Lefsetz puts it well. He just says, any of us as fans, we only have time and interest to listen to your best work. I can call myself a Jackson Browne fan. Truth be told, there's probably only three or four of his tracks that get a lot of listens from me. Now, I can appreciate all of his stuff, this album and that album.
Yeah.
But, man, there's this one or two seminal tracks that I just go, dude, song for Adam.
And even if you didn't have those other tracks, you would still feel the same way about Jackson Browne.
That's probably right.
So I noticed myself doing this subconsciously last week. I was going through my iTunes that you know, just has tons of stuff in it. And I was just hitting all the high points of the different artists I have in there. And man, each artist, there's like three or four songs that I gotta have that define that artist in my mind.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it, it's nice to have, but man, they three or four for everybody.
You know,
and it's all, and I will go. I would go see those people live just to hear two or three of those songs.
Yeah.
It's not like I need, Ryan Adams has 40 awesome songs. No, he doesn't. In my opinion, he has like six really kick-ass songs.
Those tracks you'll take with you to your grave.
All
you
I know? Need That's from right. Them. Right. And I don't think any... When I go and play shows somewhere and people come up and they... I can almost tell you before they open their mouth what songs they're going to mention that they think are really cool.
Yeah.
And I know when I finish writing a song, is this going to be one of those songs?
That's right.
You know? So then you find your... Like I was recently making an album... Going, man, me and the band, we like these songs, we enjoy playing them. But the truth is, when I look at the iTunes sales, nobody's going to buy the.
Yeah,
they're
going
to buy the first three songs in the album. The rest of them, oh, those are cool, they're great. They made the album worth $10.
Well, you know what really sucks is.
My album?
No.
Yeah.
Nay. When I gave, back in the 90s, I put. Rollin', which was kind of a popular song of ours, on I Got Paid by Compadre Records. Was they were doing a compilation CD of great Texas road songs. The Texas Road Trip, you know? And they sold tonnage on those things.
Oh, yeah, they sold a ton of those
tens
things.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah.
So I got a royalty check, you know, for, you know, something every quarter. So I was pleased. I was like, hey, sweet, sweet, sweet. Well, guess what, my friend? Now, in the age of iTunes... When I go to Phil Pritchett's most downloaded list, number one is Rollin'. Not me. Phil Comes Alive. Those 99 cents go to Phil Pritchett. It's off of the Hellbent and Country Bound album.
Yeah.
So that play goes to the CD that I made. Does this make sense to you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It goes to the compilation. It's not attributed to your record.
And then I get less money on the way, way back end. Which has ceased since that label went under, got bought out. So I don't know if that's... So people are going there, downloading, rolling all the time. I'm getting no money from it because I licensed it just to be on one stupid CD in like 1998.
Yeah.
That sucks. So my recent albums, if I'm getting a lot of downloads from, you know, the doorman or something, that goes to me. It's not on anything else. It's only on iTunes by virtue of me putting it there. But if someone else did it... So I can't imagine some of these guys that had a bunch of stuff... Because if you have a big song, but it was on some compilation a long time ago, and that's the quote-unquote, even though it's the exact same recording, it's filed
it's
under...
licensed
to
that project, yeah.
It's weird, dude. Very, very weird.
It is. Man, I tell you what. I wish more than anything that people would let the album go.
Yeah.
Because, man, for me, I hate making records. Let me say it again. Freaking hate
making
sitting down and going,
album,
man, let's come up with 10 songs. Screw the 10 songs. Tomorrow I could go write one really cool song and in 48 hours have it laid down with really just sounding great.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be out there. It's immediate. It's, hey, this is what I just did. I mean, I've been working on this album for 6-7 months now. And people go, hey, what's the new album? It could have been out. 6 months ago, if we had decided not to do an album, because the stuff that you're going to like off of it could have been done immediately, you know? And, man, just the cost to, okay, we got to pay a guy to mix it, we got to pay a guy to master, we got to, man, it gets to the point you're like, dude, I spent all this money so that these people could get these three songs.
Right.
And I love, you know me, I love the 3 to 4 song EP. I think it's a great idea.
That's right, yeah.
It's a great vehicle. Now, the music business doesn't like that model as much.
Right.
You know, record label guys, managers, agents. Yeah, they don't like it because, well, you know, there's not enough for everybody to take a cut off of. And, man, when I was trying to just do EPs in the recent years, I had music business people, oh, you're committing career suicide. The album, man, you got to go make a great album. But there's no evidence to bear that.
No.
Nothing backs it up.
Nope.
And, you know, I said it again after we made this album, because I thought I'm going to give an album one more shot.
So what do you do? You're just going to make a song, put it on iTunes, and
I
make
think,
$16?
I think there's a happy medium. I think it's where the EP comes in, where you can have the one focal track, but you have a couple really strong ones to support it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put it up and set it up like an album, but it's just a 3 or 4 song album.
Right.
And man, there's people can sit and listen to it in 16 minutes, make their decisions based off of. You know, I've had people, my album's streaming on my Facebook page right now.
Right.
I've had people who've actually sat and listened to the whole 49 minutes or whatever. But that's rare, man. That's only a few people are going to do that.
Right.
And I've had other people say, man, I skipped around, heard a couple tracks, this is one I like, blah, blah. But man, if you just, I think you make it more accessible the shorter it is and go, hey, I'm not going to burden you with that other crap.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. Take it. And I think in the context of an album, you're making it harder for people to see what you do best. And I know guys like us like to think, oh, I'm an artist. I can do this album and make a statement. No one cares about our crappy statement. Mm-hmm. And we're not as good as we think we are. Because
we just want one great track. As
that's
a fan.
All they want, one, man.
One or
you
two
want that
great
one
songs?
Song that is ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous. One listen.
And that's it.
Love it.
And you
done.
Know what? If you give them that like twice a year, they are happy. Yeah. I'm telling you, they are happy. There's so few albums that you can look at.
Because you join their rank on their iPod that, hey, man, you're going to now be in my shuffle, man, among all my favorites. That one track. But they're not, you're not going to put all 10 of your new tracks on there. Only the most diehard fans.
And I'm telling you, the only reason I went back and made this album recently is because of pressure from other people who say, man, you got it. That's just the name of the game.
You heard it
album.
Here first. Kurt South caving to the pressure of the world.
And I did, and you know what?
New album.
And I feel the same way coming out of it as I did going in. I'm glad we made it in a way because I think it is good and I'm proud of all of it. But from a business standpoint,
it'll
and
prove
from
you're
a,
right.
And
you think?
Yes.
You think
it will.
It'll ultimately kind
of, I could have spent a third of the money and done 3 or 4 really killer songs.
Yeah.
And left the rest, whatever. I think from a business standpoint, it's harder to make an album make sense for independent guys nowadays. And I think the fans have become so trained at this point.
Yeah.
To just go, man, I'm looking for this one Randy Rogers song.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that Bart Croce. I'm looking for. How many people have Zach Brown's Chicken Fried?
Me.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
How
but
many
everybody,
people,
it's ubiquitous.
Everybody how many yeah. people own the album? If you
right.
go look at the numbers, they're, you know, like 4 million people have the track.
Off of iTunes, yeah, right.
600,000 have the album. Now, 600,000 is still a big number, but look at the difference between the two.
Right.
That's
right.
A huge disparity. And I think that tells you, if you're a young guy starting out and you're trying to make this album, man, I think you are going in the completely wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
Completely wrong direction. And I mean, I've made that mistake over and over again because I feel like I need the business to accept me.
Well, but a few years ago, that was the right thing to try and do, was to try to make an album, don't you think?
Well, yes and no. I think from the you and the fan standpoint,
yeah.
pull out all the middlemen,
uh-huh.
it wasn't the right thing to do.
Hmm.
I think from the perception of the business, you know, radio stations, and managers and booking agents. You know, you couldn't get a booking agent to work with you unless you were pushing an album.
Right, right, right.
You know, and I had them tell me that, man, we can't do that. You know, and I think I proved them wrong because I went for a long time and didn't make it a full album.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beneficial to me financially to not make albums.
Yeah.
More people got more music and were able to get right to what they wanted. And I still caved to the pressure against my better judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that remains to be seen. Maybe this one will do something that I'm not expecting. But I doubt it will.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there... Man, I have one song, the first song I ever wrote, that still gives me a career to this day.
What's that?
Pawn Shop Guitar.
Ah, a Kurt South classic.
And, man, that one song, it was consumed as a single track, and it has been for years. And
people know that one song.
That album could have never existed, but that if it was just that song, the effect would still be the same.
Dude, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, guys like Roger Craiger, and Blue Edmondson.
Their career is based off of three singles,
their
man.
Their diehard fans will extol the virtues of their new record, man, and all this. And dude, Kreger did the Everclear song. From obscurity to ubiquity in one fell swoop. At least in the Texas music world, and every fraternity guy.
A Mike Ethan Messick song.
From here to North Carolina, I knew that song.
Yeah.
On Napster, went crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, Matt Pivito, my old booking agent, who also booked Kreger, said the same thing. He goes, man, he had that one song that was so fun and silly, and everybody knew it was just a novelty hit, man. He goes, and that's it. There are people who go to his shows today ready to hear that one song at the end of the set. And, Edmondson, or someone like that, you're kind of like, you hear this and that, whatever. Man, that,
$50 and a flask of Crown.
Another Matt Powell song. But both those are songs that those guys didn't write. It was a real songwriter, like Powell, maybe at the time, their best song. Maybe, or at least the best fit for someone like Blue or Roger to cut.
Right.
So it was a combination of great material and a guy who could sing it.
You had the creator and
Lloyd
the
Maines,
right star.
Lloyd Maines produced, I think, both of those tracks.
Yeah, he did.
And it was well produced. And man, when those tracks come on to this day, I'm like, man, that's a, you know, I mean, is it something I listen to all the time? I don't know, but I can appreciate it and I can see its appeal instantly. There's no question. You're just like, dude, it's just a hit.
Matt Powell has never written a bad song.
No, yeah.
If y'all don't know Matt Powell, go listen to something. That dude's incredible.
Powell. The great Matt Powell. Great singer, too.
Plays guitar, plays banjo, plays everything. That dude is one
of the... So why didn't a guy like Powell, why isn't he out there selling stuff out? He's more talented than all of us.
He's too good to be that successful, man.
Why? Well, come on, man. That doesn't make any sense. That's like saying the NFL doesn't want, Peyton Manning. He can read defenses too well. Come on, man. How come it doesn't work?
I don't think Matt Powell is wired, and I'm speculating.
Yeah, well,
I don't know, Matt.
This is a big question.
I think, man.
Indeed, a reporter called you recently
and said,
how come Phil's not as big as Pat Green or something?
Boy, this reporter was just asking some pointed questions of me. I was just walking around my house in my underwear, and all of a sudden I have a reporter on the phone just digging.
Yes, fans, you're on Phil Pritchard getting some local press, man. Just got
I think, listen, this might offend some people, but this is the truth. If you're offended, then...
No.
Wah. But, man, there's a... Even in the Texas Red Dirt thing, honestly, it's not any different than Nashville or L.A. or New York.
Yeah.
There's a game. There's a hierarchy established.
There's a center. There's a bullseye
and
to be struck.
Forgive me for saying this. There's a certain amount of ass-kissing. There's a certain amount of politicking that goes on.
Yeah.
All that stuff has to happen. And a guy like Matt Powell, his passion is not any of those things. His passion is being a great player, a great songwriter, a great singer. And I don't think it ever crosses his mind to go out and do all those other things because he's too busy being great and doing all that stuff.
That's right.
And he's probably not willing to go out and do that stuff.
Right.
And a lot of these guys who are stars, man, a lot of the reason that they're stars isn't because they're the most talented or the best singer, the best songwriter, best player. In fact, they're usually not.
Yeah.
But they know how
other skills.
They know how to sell themselves.
To go up the chain, sure.
They know how to play the game. Mm-hmm. They could just as soon be running for Secretary of State or
that's right.
And look, and that is the truth. And if you don't believe me, I invite you to go watch it unfold, man. There's a game to be played, and a guy like Matt Powell, it probably doesn't cross his mind that, hey, I need to go out and do this and get to know that guy, and we need to play it from this angle. He's not thinking that. He's too busy picking up a sitar and learning how to flat pick it or something.
That's right.
And he's too busy writing a bunch of great songs. And they're two very different animals. There's the star and there's the creators.
That's right.
Matt Powell's a creator, no doubt. Adam Hood is a creator.
Yeah.
Roger Kreger is a star, and he deserves it. Look, that guy knows how to go out and do what needs to be done. It's a different skill set. And it doesn't mean that Kreger sucks. It means that he has a set of talents that Matt Powell doesn't.
That's right.
It's just a different kind of thing. Pat Green is a master at it.
Yeah.
The dude. And I'm not saying Pat didn't have musical ability. He does.
Right.
But, man, Pat Green,
his real strength is
he knows how to be
working
a star.
Around, man.
And look, I envy
right.
Pat's business sense. I envy the way that he's able to take a room and make it his, no matter who.
Network.
And, it could be a nursing home crowd, yeah, or it could be a crowd full of 12-year-old kids. Pat can win them over.
People talk about Garth Brooks the same way. Yeah. You know? I mean, he was another guy like
same
that.
Same thing. But look, yeah, you know, it works the same in Texas as it does in Nashville, sure, or anywhere else. You know,
how many, I always kind of made the point along the same line, how many just great college professors are out there who are just wholesome, hardworking, honest, intelligent, compassionate, tough. You go, man, how come he's the best we got in this country? How come he's not president of the United States? Yeah. We got some scum-sucking...
It's a different skill set, man.
You know, some it's scumbag up there. You're kind of like, dude, you know, this guy with a bunch of honesty and integrity is not going to... Or he loves his job, being a history chair at SMU. He's, you know... The first rung on the ladder to the presidency is, all right, man, you got to go get in bed with these guys, or you got to, or man, you got to soften your stance on this, or stop it. And he's going to go, hey, man, I'm not doing that. And so, okay, then you're off the ladder altogether.
Yeah, you're off.
But meanwhile,
the list
you got whoever, you got Paul, got
John Edwards
coming out of the woodwork, you know,
John, the Nookie King in North Carolina,
just stuffing girls under.
Whoa, easy,
under
easy.
A bed. No, I mean just, wow, you know, photos or whatever. He's able to sidestep a few landmines to get on the fast track. You know, he's like, okay, well,
you know, I we'll think that's the
stuff this under the bed and keep going.
I think that's the hardest thing for the casual fan.
Right.
To differentiate between people they like.
Right.
Is, you know, man, I heard somebody say this just the other day. They're talking about Adam Hood.
Yeah.
Man, I saw Adam Hood a while back. And that guy just, man, why is he not the biggest person in the world?
That's right.
My answer is the same for Matt Powell. I'm like,
right.
Man, Adam Hood is so busy being great.
Yeah.
Being Adam Hood. And that's what he does. That's his passion.
Is that
what
we're doing?
Do.
What are you and I doing? Are we being great? Are we all consumed?
I'm about to announce my candidacy for Secretary of Agriculture of the state, actually.
You got a lot of things to stuff under the bed, my friend.
Before that comes to pass. I mean, people ask me, you know, why aren't you, you know, you're one of my favorites. Why aren't you doing this or doing that?
Well, next week, I want to delve in a little more about the reporter snooping around. The nice young kid from around here.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Doing a feature article. Which I've done a lot over the years on certain things.
Do you have any pictures of Phil?
All right.
You know.
All
hey, man,
right.
I stood up for you.
I want to hear about it.
I want to talk. Protected.
I want to talk a little bit about that maybe next week.
Shrouded
and
in secrecy.
Further, you didn't even get to the vault section. God, this show needs a producer. You know, we need a guy to keep us on point.
Where's Reynolds? That's his job.
I don't know. Well, next week, man, we're going to continue. Hey, this is a special two-week, two-part retrospective, a year in review, the P2 podcast. Where we've been, where we're going, we're going to be looking back at, just recounting little funny moments, interesting emails we got, talking about where we are now, what we've been working on.
Should we even keep going another year?
I don't know. Maybe we just hang it up. This is the best we got.
Have we peaked? That's the question. Let us hear from you.
Have
we peaked?
I'm sure we have. But, man, join us next week for the podcast. Email me,
phil@philpritchard.com. Next week?
Yes.
Special guest?
Yes.
Mick Jagger?
Mick Jagger? Really?
Mick Jagger?
Mick
maybe.
Jagger going to be on. We're going to see. We're going to see if we can get him
on. I think
on.
Mick Jagger might be here next week.
He might indeed.
He's been in town showing steers at the stock show.
What are you talking about?
He's
what are you talking? You're putting me on the spot.
I'm just trying to reel him in for the next show, man. You never know. Mick Jagger might be here.
The next show is going to be what people tune into the show for. You sitting there on the couch.
Being a jerk.
Smacking your gums, spitting your snuff into a cup. And just being a jackass. That's what we love.
Welcome to the
show,
people.
It's free advice.
Glad you're not paying for it.
Join us next week. Email us, phil@philpritchard.com. Man, come record at the studio, 817-733-5256. Thank you, Kurt South, for being here.
Thank you.
Join us next week where Kurt will be back as we further recount the year that was on the P2 podcast. Oh, the glory. Oh, the growth. And I want to get into more about that story of that kid chasing around town, asking questions about me. Make sure there's nothing coming out.
There's plenty coming out.
Well, join us next week. More retrospective on the podcast. We'll see y'all next week. Take care.
After living underground, she had a nasty reputation as a girl who lied. When she made the declaration, country music has died. She said, it's all right.
It's okay, it doesn't make a difference to me anyway. It doesn't make a difference to me anyway. Down in a 6th Street bar, over a Jack and Coke, she's had today's country music, this one big joke. But don't get me wrong, 'cause I know what to do. I'm gonna form a rock and roll band in Texas, and I'm gonna kick out the good tunes, yeah. It's alright, it's okay, it doesn't make a difference to me anyway. It doesn't make a difference to me anyway. Yeah, Jenny looked her best friends right into the eye. Said, don't try to tell me that you think it's all a lie, 'cause some of you know what I mean. Some of you know what I mean. Some people say country music is alive and well, but it's all gone the way a big band, y'all, as far as I can tell. They're both in a museum behind the glass, but rock and roll is the future, the present and the past. It's okay, it doesn't make a difference to me anyway. It's alright, it's okay, it doesn't make a difference to me anyway. 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 Thank you.